We'll go digital in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. From the analog studios of the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, with this rain report. That's the sound of FSQ, Fast Simple QSO. One of the New Zealand hams behind it is retired electronics engineer Murray Greenman, ZL1BPU. When Murray isn't driving a school bus in his retirement, he's dabbling in the digital realm of amateur radio.
I've been interested in finding a way of providing good comms for emergency operation for some time. But my friend Con ZL2AFP and I have been chatting about that and exploring other modes. As you probably know, I specified MFSK16 back in 1999 and it's sort of developed from there. The most recent couple of developments that Con and I have done have been Domino EX back about 96 or thereabouts, and then WSQ, Weak Signal QSO, which was developed for the really long wave bands. It's extremely sensitive, but what we developed for that was several of the things that are now in FSQ. First of all, the alphabet and the use of 33 tones and the business of not having any sync. That all came in WSQ, and we got to thinking, this is sort of the middle of last year, how it might be possible to speed the whole thing up and make something useful for a chat mode that we might be able to add things to make it useful for emergency comms. And by chat mode, I mean a way that you can have a conversation with somebody that's unlike a RagTube. Conventional RagTube QSOs, somebody wibbles on for 5 minutes and then they put it over to somebody else and they wibble on for 5 minutes. Whereas a chat is like a face-to-face conversation. You have you say a sentence, and while you take a breath, someone else says a sentence. Well, that's what we had in mind. WSQ worked by typing a sentence and pressing enter. But, of course, it was very slow. It only worked at about 3 words a minute. So we thought, see if we can speed this up. That's what got us started. That was about July, August last year. FSQ means, or stands for, Fast Simple QSO. And that's relatively self-explanatory, and I think it explains exactly what it does. It's a chat mode that uses 33 tones, and because it uses so many tones, it's able to send a letter of the alphabet on one tone. So despite the fact that the tone rate is quite slow, de-do-de-do-de-do-de-do sort of thing, it's able to send a whole letter on each tone. So the typing speed is quite fast. It's a frequency shift keyed mode with 33 tones, giving 32 tone differences. It uses incremental keying, which means that the information is sent not in the value of the tone, the audio frequency tone, but in the difference between that tone and the previous one. That's what incremental frequency keying means. That has several advantages. One of them is that it makes it drift-proof. Another one is that it makes it much less affected by Doppler shift, which is a common problem on signals on these frequencies. And the third thing is it has to do with the way the synchronism or lack of synchronism works. You don't ever get two tones, one after the other, that are the same. So it can work out where each tone finishes and the next one starts easily. And the final thing about that is that because you never get two tones the same or even adjacent, the tones don't interfere with each other. And while you say, well, hang on, said one tone after the other, how can they interfere with each other? The answer is they often arrive from different ionospheric paths and therefore overlap. So we need to make sure that the signal doesn't interfere with itself when it's coming via different paths. This is MVIS, after all.
What if you're using two letters that are identical in a row?
Remember, it's incremental. The value of the letter is sent not in the value of the frequency of the tone, but in the difference between one tone and the next. So, for example, if you hit the space bar several times, you get da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Not the same tone all the time. Because there's a difference, there's also an extra one added. It's a bit complicated, but it's an offset incremental frequency keying system. Domino EX used the same thing. Once we proved that it did work, sped up, we also discovered that it was also quite robust. We spent quite a lot of time adjusting the parameters, the baud rates and the spacings and all that sort of thing, to suit the sort of propagation you get on 80, 40 and 30 meters, especially 80 and 40, which is near vertical incident signals, NVIS stuff. And once we'd got that worked out, we realized that it was extremely robust and didn't require any error correction. The whole business of adding the commands and so on for emergency comms, the general fun of it, came along from that. I specified the command structure. It's sort of quite new. Nothing's ever been done quite like that before. That's how it sort of grew.
What kind of issues are your new FSQ users encountering or reporting to you?
The first one is how little they read the documentation. Most of the questions that are asked can be answered by reading the documentation. Others are difficult to answer at all because they have unreasonable expectations. But there are some really interesting ones. I met one yesterday. A guy was asking, when we've got perfectly good text communication using FSQ, why do the images that we receive, because it's able to see in pictures as well, why are the pictures noisy? And the answer to that is not as simple as you might think. It's to do with the fact that when you're receiving tones, individual tones which are used for text, you're receiving them in individual filters that are 3 hertz wide. Whereas when you're receiving the images, you're receiving them in a single demodulator process, which is 400 hertz wide, and so the signal-to-noise ratio is correspondingly worse. There have been lots of questions about the syntax of the commands and why they work like they do, and why can't you do this and why can't you do that. To some extent, it's unreasonable expectations, but most of the time it's operational problems, people not setting the software up correctly, problems with sound cards, particularly have problems with computer-operated transmitters, cat control.
You're listening to a conversation between Rains Hap-Holly, KC9RP, and Murray Greenman, ZL1BPU, a driving force behind the digital mode known as FSQ, Fast Simple QSO. Murray also developed a high-stability reference which he adapted for ham use as a GPS-disciplined reference. We'll conclude our conversation with Murray after I remind you that the RAIN Report is available anytime on therainreport.com, on Twitter at #TheRainReport, and via iTunes.
You're listening to The RAIN Report from www.therainreport.com.
Let's talk about the emergency communications application of FSQ.
As you probably realize, a lot of emergency communications these days is done on VHF and UHF, but it relies on what I call infrastructure. You need to have repeaters. You can't get very far unless you do. The whole aim of FSQ is that it provides digital capability without requiring infrastructure. In other words, you can be 100 kilometers away from your nearest contact station and you may have had some sort of civil emergency, but you're able to contact someone out of the area easily. If the emergency is quite widespread, then you can contact people in other parts of the area. And it's especially important in our country because it's not only sparsely populated, but it's quite hilly and with a lot of forest. So VHF comms is really not practical. While we do have some repeaters, you can guarantee that in time of civil emergency, an earthquake or a tornado or a tsunami, that those things won't be available. That's why the use of NVIS. There's no other means of getting propagation from one point to another with relatively simple equipment when you've got hills and forests in the way. You need to use the ionosphere.
We really need to take a minute to define NVIS.
Near vertical incidence signals. In other words, signals that go up, not necessarily vertically, but not out horizontally, that go up into the ionosphere and hit the E layer, which is about 30 to 50 kilometers up, or the F layer, which might be 300 kilometers up, and then turn around and come back down again. If you're far enough away, there won't be any ground wave signal. You'll just get signals that have come back from the ionosphere to your station. Unfortunately, there are several paths. As I said, E layer and F1 and F2, because there are two F layers often. During the day, there are certainly two F layers. Consequently, you get signals from these three different sources, which have different timing and also have different frequencies, because the layers are moving, so you get Doppler shift. That's the nature of NVIS. You get multiple signals arriving, because if you're close enough, you can get ground wave as well. And they all have different timing, they can have different frequencies, and their signal strengths vary up and down. So when they interfere with each other, you get considerable fading and so on. So you need a huge fade margin to be able to handle signals like that, and you have to have a mode that will handle large changes in timing and large changes in frequency. By large, I mean it's about 1 ppm, 1 hertz per megahertz of frequency shift. The frequencies we're talking about where NVIS operation works between, say, 2 megahertz and 10 megahertz, and during the day, the higher frequencies work, and during the, and at night, the lower frequencies work.
So the advantage of NVIS is that you can be on one side of a mountain, and you need to get a signal to the other side. FSQ would work for that.
My friend Con, who's the guy that has written the software, lives in Gisborne, which is 300 kilometres from here. We have no trouble at all talking to each other most of the day on 40 metres, and most of the night on 80 metres. In winter, the crossover point is a bit touchy, around about 5 p.m., where 40 metres can die out before 80 metres is picked up. But late at night on 80 metres, we hear VK6s running FSQ. That's the western side of Australia, 3,000 kilometres away.
Tell me about the software.
The original software, written by ConZL2AFP, was written in standard NCC, and it's a simple standalone program. It's been copied and adapted slightly by a couple of Americans and added a couple of Americanized features, especially for relaying. That's something that Americans are really keen on, relaying messages. NW8L and KA4CDN are the two guys. The original ZL2AFP code is public domain. He's released the source code for it. These two guys took the source code and tweaked it a bit, but their program has a few other features, but it essentially looks exactly the same and works the same. There's a third program currently available, and that's been done quite differently, done by Dave, W1HKJ, who is the FL Digi man. He has adapted the code to fit into FL Digi. It functions a bit differently, and it's quite a bit more difficult to use, but it has several major advantages. First of all, it's in a suite of programs that runs all the other modes. It runs RGTY and PSK31 and so on. And that's been quite a challenge for him because it's the first mode that he's got in his suite that works as a chat mode. You press enter and it sends. That's different. It's not a RAGTU mode. Big advantage is the FL Digi version runs on Apple and Linux platforms, whereas the original and the first American copy of it, purely Windows programs. Although they will work on Linux if you use Wine. The point is that with an NVIS setup, you can put up an antenna for 80 metres that's quite low to the ground. In fact, on 40 metres, I frequently just dangle it on a fence or a hedge. It doesn't need to be up very high because you're wanting the signals to go up anyway. For an emergency station, you can get out there with your car and your gear and connect up very easily. And then you've got comms for 50 to 200, 300 kilometres. And you can send formal messages as well as just conversations and orders and things like that. Much simpler and cheaper than any of the more formal selective calling systems. More importantly, it's ad hoc, meaning anybody can be involved. It all works by call sign. You don't have to have pre-registered station IDs. You don't have to have your gear pre-programmed. There are no pre-programmed frequencies and all that sort of thing, which is what happens with other selective calling systems. And, of course, the ad hoc thing is very, very important in an emergency situation because you have to work with what you've got. That's that aspect of it. So you can use it for order wire, in other words, telling a station what to do and where to go. You can use it for sending messages to stations, which they can record. You can send formal radiograms, pictures back and forth. You can use your webcam to send a picture. I would imagine in a real-life emergency, your base station would need to be set up for at least two bands because comms for some stations would drop out on one band before they went did it, where it did on others, depending on the distance. But the whole thing has been thought about to be an infrastructure-free ad hoc system. That's essentially it.
Where would I find FSQ typically?
The program itself lists the operating frequencies. There's a tab in the program called the Rules tab, which gives you instructions on how to basically operate the system, what you can and can't do and how it works. It gives you a list of the calling frequencies. For region 2, 80 metres is 3594, 40 metres is 7104, 30 metres is 10144. They are upper sideband dial frequencies.
Give those frequencies once more, please.
3594, 7104, 10144.
And that concludes our foray into FSQ, Fast Simple QSO, with its driving force Murray Greenman ZL1 BPU of Waiuku, New Zealand. You can read Murray's article about FSQ in the September 2015 QST, and you'll find the URL for his website on the Rain Sites mentioned page on therainreport.com. The Rain Report is copyright 1990-2015 Rain. All rights are reserved. Now, for everyone connected with the Radio Amateur Information Network, I'm Will Rogers, K5WLR, bidding you very 73 from the Rain Report. Accessible on therainreport.com, via Twitter at #TheRainReport, and on iTunes.